that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today, we have something different for you today. It is the first part of our three-part season finale, where we have a bunch of people from around the KU blogosphere, and kind of around the KU media joining us to tell us about and help us to recap different moments of the season for the entire academic school year that we just had. Obviously, everything was cut short with COVID-19, but I wanted to make sure that we went back and actually looked at everything and really appreciated just all the things that happened during this year. So to help me do that, I have a bunch of people coming on, several people from Rock Chalk Talk. We've got Derek Knoll, Michael Plank, Kyle Davis, David Potter, and Steve Fetch, all guys that have been on the podcast several times before. We also have Brendan Dorzinski, who's also over at Rock Chalk Talk, but is one of the radio hosts over at 580 in Topeka. We have Jesse Newell, the Kansas City Star, Scott Chasen of Fog.net and 24/7 Sports. And then we have Andrew Doty of the High Motor Podcast joining us. He was the last time he was on was just before the football season started. Some of you guys may remember him as the guy that said that David Beatty was not a horrible hire. Which we actually kind of get into in his first question here. But we have all those guys on the podcast, and I'm going to be joining at the very end, to kind of give my own thoughts about my favorite moment. But tonight we are focusing on football. We're going to be talking about our favorite football moment. Throughout the rest of the week, we'll be looking at our favorite basketball moments, and then also kind of just a favorite moment from the rest of the athletic department. So that way we're making sure, we do cover all the sports here at Rock Chalk Talk and on the Rock Chalk podcast. And I wanted to make sure that we highlighted some of those other sports as well. So we have those three different episodes will be happening in that order. And then during the final episode, I'll kind of have some final thoughts to wrap up the season and kind of get you guys set for what we're going to be doing over the summer. We are not going away over the summer. I will have more episodes for you. I've already pre-recorded some stuff, which should be really interesting. I think you guys are going to enjoy a lot. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and get it over. I'll introduce each of the guys as they come on so that they can talk about their favorite football moments. And then I will be back giving you guys some extra, some of my own thoughts about my own favorite moment. I'm trying to highlight maybe some things that the other guys didn't catch. We will be going to breaks in between some of the guys here. I don't know exactly where the breaks are right here as I'm recording this intro, but we will throw them in between people. And I've got Derek Knoll, one of our writers over at Rock Chalk Talk, here with me. Derek, what is your favorite or the biggest memory you have from the football season this year?
Well, I started thinking about it a little while ago, and I think it has to go back to that Kansas against Boston College game at the beginning of the year for a couple of reasons. I mean, just watching that game, it made you feel like football was a thing again, college football at least. It made you feel like we actually had a team. So for me, it was that big win against Boston College that snapped that, I think it was 48-game winless streak against a Power 5 team, if I'm not mistaken, something like that. It finally broke that barrier through. Kansas was down early in that game, 10-0, and then they scored, and then they were down 17-7, so it kind of felt like it was kind of going to go back and forth, and then all of a sudden it was just Carter Stanley making plays, and I think Khalil Herbert had a couple big breaking runs. Puka scored one. Just everything kind of happened there, and Kansas had the lead at the half and then just sort of never looked back. And it was a really awesome football game to watch because it seemed like that thing was like 10 years in the making almost of real live football game, other than the Texas game a few years ago and some random weirdo games against TCU and things like that. but those were all at home, right? So this away game made it feel even better, I think. So for me, it's that 48-24 game against Boston College early on in the year. But also simultaneously, that thing was a little frustrating because the Coastal Carolina game was right before that, if you guys remember. And oof, I mean, that's a missed opportunity for sure, especially after watching what Kansas did in that next one. But watching quarterback be competent, watching play calling exist, watching running back break plays and people blocking for him. I mean, it was football, and it was nice to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I also agree. I mean, it was kind of like a nice change of pace, and you know, the things that happened that were completely different. Was there any particular play though in that game that kind of just immediately turned around your? Because like I remember Boston College got up early in that game, and it was definitely like, oh my gosh, is this going to be another one where we're going to get blown out? Like was there any specific play specifically that really kind of turned your mood on that one?
It was early on. I don't think it was the first touchdown, but maybe the second. They had a big play that got down close to the goal line. They had to jam one in eventually, which Kansas is kind of, you know, they've had a good running game, honestly, for a little while now, but it just didn't seem like it made any difference, you know. They had a couple of good plays. Stanley looked like a real quarterback, and that's really what it was. A couple of head fakes and got guys open. Just some presence in the pocket for me. But I think it was that second drive. They went down and scored and made it 10-7, which made it respectable. But Boston College immediately responded. So for me, when KU responded again, that's when that game sort of switched for me. Because I think I remember even in the text chat that some of the Rock Chalk Talk guys have, it was already doom and gloom after 10-0. And I was one of the people that was dooming and glooming pretty hard.
Yeah, well, I think it also was difficult in that it was really hard to watch that game because it was on the ACC network. And so it was really hard to actually watch the game because pretty much nobody had it. And so kind of just following on Gamecast, I was able to find a stream somewhere to watch it, which was like the one time all year long that I watched a game on the stream just because, you know, I was expecting that I was going to be able to turn it off pretty early. But, you know, in terms of the plays, I think that kind of turned it around would have to be, you know, getting ready to go into the half, and Kansas just, you know, it looked like they were going to try to see if they could get a good play or two to maybe go try to kick a field goal to get back within one. And Khalil Herbert just breaks that gigantic run down the sideline, and, you know, they end up turning that into a touchdown right before halftime. So I thought that was really kind of what turned it from being a, you know, this is a back and forth, and Kansas may not have enough firepower to all of a sudden – what is going on with this, you know, with this team? They're just running all over them. And what are, you know, what can we look forward to in the second half?
Right. And I just watched the highlights to kind of prep for this conversation, and the big plays that KU had in that game. I mean, there was probably 10 or 15, just like big plays, 15, 20, 30, 40 yards. And dudes were wide open, and Herbert made two massive runs. The one you're talking about and one later in the game as well. And I couldn't watch a lot of that, like you said there. For some reason, I could watch it at home. I could stream it from my house for some reason, but we made plans with some people that night. We went out with them, and I wound up watching that, streaming it on my phone while other games were happening. So me and one of my buddies were watching that a little bit while other people were just kind of going about their lives, eating, you know, whatever they were eating and doing whatever they were doing. And it was like, whoa, Kansas, we're winning a football game, and we're making it look – we're making it look like it's easy. Like, this is what – I mean, when was the last time that happened? The early section of that 2008 season right before Mangino got the can? I mean, that was the last time things functioned that smoothly as far as I can remember.
And I've got Scott Chasen from 24/7 Sports, fog.net, joining me now. Scott, just what is your favorite or the biggest memory that you have from the football team this season?
That's a really good question, because there are a few you could pull from. I mean, obviously the season opener against Indiana State with Hassan Defense getting a pick six for the first touchdown of the Les Miles era, and then obviously the Daylon Charlotte touchdown catch to kind of cap off his first win. The Texas Tech and Texas games, I guess, back-to-back in the other order, Texas and then Texas Tech. Those games were pretty nuts, especially the endings of both games. Kansas obviously coming out on the right side of one and not the right side of the other. I think for me, I would probably say the Texas game. And it's funny that you would pick, or I would pick, a loss as maybe the most memorable or the best moment of the KU football season. But I think a number of things kind of factored into that, which, you know, just one being the arrival of Brent Dierman, this idea of, hey, maybe this KU offense can look a little different. Maybe things will be a little different. And I'm not sure I've ever seen a game get more buzz and be more memorable that ultimately was a loss in that game. I mean, you compare it to the TCU games that, you know, David Beatty and company were really close in. And, yeah, people talked about those, and they eventually won one of them. But, you know, it didn't reach that same level because, you know, it's Texas. And even though Texas was missing a bunch of defensive starters, you put up 48 points in a game. That's going to raise some eyebrows. It's going to turn some heads. And, yeah, I think to me that would have been the most memorable performance for Kansas.
Yeah, I was going to say, that one made my short list. And because, like you said, like the expectations for Kansas last year was not that they were going to win a bunch of games and go to a bowl game. It was that they were going to show solid improvement, that they were going to be able to, you know, show that they were building something. And that game against Texas, you know, that really showed. It was the first chance for Brent Dierman to really showcase what he was looking to be able to do. You know, they were able to go toe-to-toe with what was supposed to be one of the Big 12 powers in the year, and really kind of showcase the offensive abilities and what the team was able to do. And they had some really good defensive stops too. And yes, Texas scored a bunch in that game, and it was a lot of back and forth, but there were several times in that game where you were worried, you know, about, oh, well, Texas was going to go on a big run and kind of put it away. And, oh my gosh, the game's over at this point. And every single time, you know, Kansas was able to come back and take the lead. And then Texas was just able to go ahead and, you know, finally put that final drive together. And even then, like, that game could have gone either way. And while it wasn't a win and that monumental upset, it was enough to give you good feelings about the team. And really, you know, recognize that they were potentially building something, and that if Dierman gets an opportunity to kind of get that full install, you know, he can do something special here. It's just a matter of actually getting it pulled together.
Yeah, and I mean, look, they scored 48 points in the Boston College game too, and that was a special game. I think, what did they score, touchdowns or on seven straight drives or just something insane? Like,
yeah,
that,
something
maybe
ridiculous.
They scored points or. And so, yeah, I mean, look, that was absolutely – now that I think about it, it probably wouldn't have been touchdowns just because the number of points. But even so, whatever it was, scoring however they did in the second half and just winning in absolute dominant fashion, that's up there too, kind of for a similar reason. But, I mean, you just saw at times how bad the offense looked under Les Kenning with a lot of the kind of Les Miles classic power running offense things that, you know, KU1 didn't necessarily have the best personnel for. And two, you know, just running into numbers that didn't make a whole lot of sense, where it really seemed like you needed someone, an offensive mind who understood kind of the modernized way that things have gone. I'm not saying you have to run the air raid and the spread 100% of the time, but I am saying you have to have a basic understanding of numbers, and that if you're Kansas football, you can't run against a 9 or a 10-man box because the other team is going to have better players, you know, than maybe what you've got. So I think it all manifests itself in that Texas game, and it was just a spectacle. You know, a little behind the scenes, I was actually at a wedding that day, and I had planned to leave a little early to still be able to do some coverage from that game, and obviously went back and rewatched afterward, but the groom was a big Kansas fan, and he was getting score updates at his wedding of the Kansas-Texas game, and it's just funny to me that, like, That's how big a deal it was. But I mean, it was an absolutely fantastic game, and it was a whole lot of fun. I wasn't actually physically in person for that one, like I mentioned, because of that wedding. But no, that was an absolutely fantastic game.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I definitely enjoyed that one, and it's kind of funny. It seems like Kansas-Texas games are the games that you pay attention to, because, like, I know when Kansas upset Texas during the David Beatty era, you know, my son was in, I think it was the finals of his football playoffs. And I was sitting there mostly paying attention to his game, but really, you know, glued to my phone with every opportunity watching that game and the end of that one. So it seems like those games routinely end up being just as important or even more important in some cases than some of the other things that are going on that are kind of surrounding you. So. And I'm being joined by Kyle Davis, one of our writers over at Rock Chalk Talk. Kyle, what I'd like from you right now is your favorite football moment from the season.
So that's a tough one.
I'd say it can either be your favorite moment or just something that you find extremely memorable from the season.
So I would say, and it's, so it's going to be weird, maybe, and maybe someone else is going to say this too, but the one that really stands out is actually a loss, and it's the Texas game. And the reason I say this too is because I was at a couple's bridal or baby shower during the game. All the guys were kind of huddled around. Someone found a stream of the game. We're following it along because it's, of course, on the Longhorn Network, who, you know, has very limited reach around here. And even though it was a loss, that seemed to be the defining game where there were guys there who weren't KU fans that were like, man, this is something that we haven't seen in a while as someone who cares not about KU football at all. And that, you know, you've seen the game against the whoever the ninth best team in the conference is, and maybe KU squeaks out a win for that one win of the year. You know, you're liable to say like the Texas Tech game, because that's the one conference win of the year is the best moment, or maybe Boston College, and Boston College would be up there too as kind of a big, I think, game that left a big impression on people. But this was the one where it's like, it's Texas in Austin. It's not supposed to be close. Carter Stanley was amazing. It went back and forth. You know, it was all up to a college kicker hitting a 40 whatever yarder for the win, and congrats to him, he made it. But that was the one that stuck out. It's like, okay, maybe that's the moment where it could be a little different, because, you know, you can get that one win where maybe everything goes in your favor and you beat the eighth best team in the conference. But to go down to Texas and be in a shootout and take the Longhorns literally all the way to the wire, that was the one that stuck with me this year. That was like, okay, I can get on board with this team.
Yeah, and I want to let you know, you're not the only person to pick that one. It is kind of one of the obvious ones. But kind of to your point, like, you know, that was one that and the Boston College games were both games where you had to, like, find a random stream because they weren't widely available. And yet they were probably two of the most entertaining games that they had. But, you know, the thing that really jumped out, because obviously the Boston College game, you know, was the first inkling of what we could see under a Brent Dearman system, because they relied heavily on his, you know, his game style in order to really push that game ahead. But this Texas game was the first one where, you know, Kansas really showed what the program was going to look like if they were to fully embrace what Brent Dearman had done. And I think it was also really intriguing because, you know, obviously Carter Stanley was the one that led, you know, the upset against Texas back in Lawrence. And then for him to come back his senior year and almost get another win to kind of bookend it, you know, on both ends there and get that win down in Austin, would have been absolutely phenomenal. But, you know, Kansas did almost everything that they needed to do there at the end. You know, and really it just came down to the defense just barely not able to keep a guy who, you know, phenomenal kicker there, barely weren't able to keep him out of the range that he needed to be able to drill that one. But, you know, there was four or five times in that game where it was just like, well, wait a minute, this should be the end of the game. Like Kansas, you know, Texas is going to assert themselves. They're going to go up. They're going to continue to go up, and Kansas isn't going to be able to come back. And yet every time the defense made a big play, the offense made a big play, and they were really able to kind of get back into the groove of that game. So yeah, I mean, I think that was, you know, that's one of the three that I was expecting people to kind of talk about a lot. You know, and guys that have been listening to this are probably going to, we haven't recorded all of them yet, but are probably going to be hearing a lot about these games. But, you know, that is definitely one of the most memorable moments, even though it was a loss.
Yeah, and then I think the, you know, and that one was too, just because it was so balanced. You mentioned Dearman. I mean, Puka got 190 yards and averaged more than 7 yards a carry, and mentioned Stanley. Stanley was just like how fit. I mean, he just didn't make mistakes. KU didn't turn the ball over the whole game. And then even, you know, one of my finalists for the option was just watching Mike Lee play this year, because just he was so endearing to watch, just run all over the field in the secondary and make big hits and just get excited. And he had the fumble recovery, and Tornadin had the fumble. Forced fumble, or maybe it was vice versa, but like those two guys, with Tornadin being a senior and from Lawrence and watching Lee play, I think that added to it, even though that was by no means one of the defense's best games. Like it just kind of had a little bit of everything that you would want to see as a as a fan looking to the future for Kansas and what could be some bright spots.
Yeah, I mean, it had the two insane touchdown catches by Stephon Robinson. You know, that one by Andrew Parchment that really kind of helped bring them back. And then that sideline catch by Daylon Charlotte, you know, the one that just everyone was going crazy. I have no idea how he actually caught that to even give them the opportunity to come back and take the lead late in that game. So there was a lot of moments from that game, you know, and whether you went from the entire game or just even individual plays from that game, you know, there was a lot to take from that particular one. So.
Yep, and I would say probably a for consideration runner-up with this. I definitely thought of Hassan defense's interception return for a touchdown being the first touchdown of the year against Indiana State. That was one that was on the list that I thought was pretty good as well. But the cumulative Texas game as a whole was just it's weird saying it in a loss, but you know I think it kind of hit home even more being around, like I said, some non KU football fans that were just like, oh, I like that a loss there put more respect on the KU program than anything else they would have done the rest of the year did.
Yeah, well, and given the fact that, you know, there wasn't a lot of expectations for this Kansas program, I think that we were going to learn more about this team and their losses than we were in their wins, unless they were to, you know, pull off a win against Oklahoma or something ridiculously crazy like that. So
Anytime Fitness is for real people with real fitness goals. I mean, let's be honest. Most of us aren't training for marathons or half marathons or even half marathons. Only time most of us are running at all is if we're trying to make a connecting flight. Wouldn't have been late if we didn't stop to buy a headphone dongle. Point is, you gotta be ready. You do not want to deal with rebooking. Anytime Fitness, where real people help you make real progress. Join today and get a plan for training, nutrition, and recovery.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And I've got Jesse Newell, the Kansas City Star here. Jesse, first question for you. What is your either favorite or like the most memorable moment that really strikes you from the football season this year for Kansas?
Yeah, I think the one that stands out to me, it's sort of interesting when I go back and as a writer, sometimes you go back and kind of look at what stories did well and what's popular or what people caused the most interest. And the number two story that I wrote this year in terms of page views actually was a KU football story. So this is like the one that has to come to mind, which was the Boston College game. I think just completely out of nowhere. I remember I picked Kansas to cover the spread and people were calling me nuts. I think the spread was like 24 points. And like, man, did you see Kansas that last week against Coastal Carolina in a short week coming up? And wow, it was like a completely different team took the field, especially on the road where KU has had so many problems. And it really announced, you know, whether we want to say it or not, it really announced the start of the Brent Neerman era, because even though he was only an analyst at the time and obviously was not coaching for Kansas, as Carter Stanley talked to us about after the game, you know, there were some elements of what he could bring to the offense in terms of run pass option that were definitely evident in that game. And it's just amazing. I think when you cover, I've covered Kansas football for so long, it's just, you go to those road atmospheres and there aren't many wins, you know, there aren't many celebrations on the field. And I remember I went down to the field with about 5 or 6 minutes left and the fans on the sideline were just screaming, going crazy. You know, the players, the players' families were there. You know, they did the rock chalk chant afterwards. There was a guy run around that pulled the flag from a cheerleader, was running it back and forth. And you got to remember, this was like at the very beginning of the Les Miles tenure, where there still was sort of this optimism that maybe things could just be crazy good in a season. He could immediately turn the program around. And so that was the type of excitement. It's tough for KU football. You just don't have those moments very often. And for Kansas to not only go on the road against a Power 5 opponent, but dominate an opponent and have that sort of statement victory on somebody else's home field and sort of the excitement that goes with that. That was the number one memory, I think, for the season for Kansas football. And that's the thing that I will definitely remember most about the season in terms of the highlights that Kansas football had, for 2019.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of funny because you mentioned how you were getting blasted for saying that they were going to cover the spread. And, you know, we do our predictions before every game. And I similarly was the only person from our entire staff that actually had said they were going to cover. I didn't think they were going to win. And I thought they were going to cover, but not by a bunch. Actually, I think I ended up actually having the spread. Let's see. I predicted they would lose by 15. So I had said that they were going to lose that game 42-27. And I got completely roasted by a bunch of people, you know, for being so optimistic, for thinking that they were going to score that many points. And like you said, like, you know, the fact that we were able to really kind of witness what this offense can look like, you know, when Brent Dierman was able to kind of get everything fully integrated and really kind of embracing the kind of offense he wants to bring with the playmakers that Kansas has. Because that's I think, where we finally got kind of the validation that this Kansas team, you know, did. And you know, in terms of guys that are coming back, do have guys that can make plays. It's just a matter of getting the scheme set up to overcome the kind of shortcomings that the offense actually does have, and really kind of find ways to highlight what they actually have there. And I think that's the one thing that Brent Dierman has kind of brought to this Kansas offense that a lot of people weren't really expecting. You know, he has shown at each of his stops that he is willing to, you know, adjust, you know, he has obviously his base concepts that he really likes to work with, but he's able to adjust it and kind of bring it the way, you know, that can help to, I guess, highlight what it is are the natural strengths of the guys that are working in the system. And it's not always successful, as we, you know, obviously found out in the second half of the year after he fully took over, but it at least gives them an opportunity to build off of what they're able to do. And that's where we got the first glimpse, like you said. You know, but I think that is going to be, or that has been so far, one of the most popular, just in terms of that particular game. I'm curious, was there any particular play in that game that you just kind of thought like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, this is what we have to look forward to, or that really kind of changed your mind on what this team was going to look like for the rest of the year?
Well, it's so weird because, again, we're talking about Kansas football, and I've covered them for a long time, and I hate to use the analogy, but it's sort of like, it seems like for Kansas football fans, it's like the guy that walks down the street and can look in the shop window and see things that he can't buy. Like, that's been, I think, it's what it's been like for Kansas football fans in terms of offense in the Big 12, because I write for like Athlon Preview magazine every year. I write those pieces, and for like 5 straight years, I wrote how Kansas had the worst scoring offense in the Big 12. I mean, it was just like I updated that note every single year. It's like Kansas fans could see the fancy shoes in the window, knowing that they never could buy them. You know, they saw every other team in the Big 12 run this up tempo, you know, RPO, you know, run and gun offense, and KU just for whatever reason could not get the pieces in place or the personnel or the coaches in place to run this sort of thing. And so, and not only that, I mean, we have to talk about the quarterback position, because they haven't gotten that right really since Todd Reesing left. I know Jordan Webb had a decent season and Michael Cummings had a decent half of a season, but other than that, there just haven't been any quarterbacks that have come through Kansas that make you say, wow, you inspire a lot of confidence. And so there was one throw I remember that I believe it was to the corner of the end zone that Carter Stanley made. It was kind of one of those read plays, but he just put it in there perfectly. Only his receiver could get to it. It extended their lead to a point where it didn't seem like that KU was going to lose the lead. It just seemed like one of those plays that, like, it was a read. It was one that he made correctly, and then he delivered the throw where it had to be, where the other guys couldn't get it. And that's just, it seems simple, and when you watch it over again, you're like, this doesn't seem like it should be overly complicated. For whatever reason, for Kansas football, it has been overly complicated. And so I think you see something like that where it happens, it's seen, it's executed, and KU scores a touchdown off of it, and all of a sudden you think, hey, there's a chance. And, you know, if I was going to give a 1B, I probably would take the loss that Kansas had at Texas. I mean, just the same sort of thing. I mean, man, I was down there at Texas where Kansas football – they didn't get out of negative yardage until the fourth quarter in Austin. I mean, there have been some nightmare games for them down there. And for them to go back and forth with Texas in a shootout and to score points after points, and you're talking about Texas guys who are 4 stars, 5 stars all over the field, same sort of eye-opening moment where it's like, hey, there could be better days ahead for Kansas football if Brent Dierman is left in charge and he gets to do what he wants to do.
Yeah, that was another one that has been so far, and I'm assuming will continue to be pretty popular, is that game against Texas. But yeah, I mean, it's that kind of thing. You know, the other play that really kind of jumped out to me, because you're talking about quarterback play and kind of just that edge, You know, that Carter Stanley run against Boston College where he ran over a guy to get a first down. You know, it's not that that was anything spectacular, because if I remember correctly, it was only a couple yards, but it was kind of that edge and that reaction from a quarterback at Kansas we haven't seen since a guy like Todd Reese, even though he didn't put up anywhere nearly, you know, the same stats. You know, he had that fire. He played with the same kind of feeling, I think, which was huge for Kansas fans to see. And you know, it's just a shame that it took until his senior year for him to get put into a system that allowed him to kind of show that competitiveness and really show, you know, that fire that he's able to bring. It is unfortunate it took that long for him to have that opportunity, but hopefully Brent Dierman can find a few more guys like that. And obviously that's one of, you know, the big issues with them not having spring ball this year is not really getting an opportunity to identify who that quarterback's going to be yet. But you know, obviously it's something big that we can kind of build on, having that system and really kind of looking forward. And I think, like you said, both of those games were just good opportunities to kind of see what is possible when you have a guy that can bring all of that together.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why Carter Stanley was a favorite for a long time, you know, his ability to put his head down, and people loved him for that. And obviously that doesn't always result in great touch passes or anything, but he made him a leader on the KU football team. That's for sure.
Yeah. Over at Rock Chalk Talk, we were huge Carter Stanley fans for a lot more often, or a lot longer than I think anyone could rationally justify. And I'm joined by Brendan Drzezinski, one of our contributors over at Rock Chalk Talk, and also one of the hosts for the afternoon show over at 580 over in Topeka. Brendan, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Andy. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. So, first question for you. The football moment from this season that's either your favorite or the most memorable?
So I think it's the answer is honestly the same for both of them this year. And you know, speaking of the home games, there aren't many that you can point to. In fact, you know, KU wins two games at home this year. But when you're talking about favorite or most memorable memory, I mean, it, to me, as much as it was a big deal for me personally to be at the first game of the season, the win over Indiana State, I know it was, you know, closer than anyone would have really hoped against an FCS team in the first game under Les Miles. But I don't know how I could go with anything other than the Texas Tech game, a game that I thought KU was not going to win because I was pretty high on Texas Tech entering this season under Matt Wells. And the game ended with the dumbest play I've ever seen. Whether it was, you know, dumb luck that got KU to win, or, you know, just Texas Tech screwing the whole thing up, it was the single dumbest play I've ever seen, the botched return on the missed field goal. And the big thing for me with that is that, you know, KU never gets those breaks in football. Kansas is the team doing the dumb stuff more often than not in the last decade. So, you know, having that moment where you thought, wow, Kansas actually got a break and won, they didn't completely squander it. I mean, that's the kind of thing that, even though the season as a whole was not glowingly positive, you felt like, okay, this is some positive momentum.
Yeah, you know, and it's actually kind of funny because I think there will be those group of fans that will say the only reason they didn't squander it is because, you know, it happened so quickly there really wasn't time for them to squander it. But like I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, this was a game where you know, yeah, Kansas had done quite a bit. I believe, if I'm remembering right, this was right after the Texas game. You know, where they had, you know, let Texas come back at the very end there in that huge shootout. And so there's a lot of questions about, well, is this going to be enough? Are they going to be able to go ahead and actually pull off the victory? You know, and I know we were split over on the site in terms of our predictions. But, you know, this was kind of that back and forth game that we were expecting. And then just the absolute insanity, you know, kind of, I don't even remember the details of that final play, but essentially, I think it was a turnover and then another turnover, like all in the same play, that ended up getting Kansas to be, or was it like a fourth down where they went for it and messed it up? Or no, it was a blocked field goal, wasn't it? That they blocked the field goal. Texas Tech tried to advance it, ended up fumbling it, and then Kansas got it back to go ahead and kick the field goal to win the game.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Liam Jones, not exactly college Roberto Aguayo, like not exactly the most reliable kicker on earth. And I think anyone would, I think Liam Jones would have told you that too. But he comes out
gets a chance to win the game for KU, has his field goal blocked, and it wasn't terribly far, just remembering off the top of my head. But then Tech, for some unknown reason, with mere seconds on the clock, tries returning it, and then there's a lateral to nobody. Nobody was ready for the pitch on the lateral play, and I can't remember the name of the Red Raider off the top of my head, because I know on our show, on 580 in Topeka, for about 4 days, we did nothing but make jokes about this, because it was the most ridiculous play possible. I'm like, what are you doing, man? There's no one there to catch your toss. So KU dives back on it. It was the center, or the long snapper, who jumped back on it. And I remember we got good
I will say, though, sorry to interrupt you, but I will say, you know, because this was something that we actually had talked about on the podcast, is it was not him just doing a lateral. I believe he was trying to make a cut, and he ended up like starting to go back that way, but not actually looking to pitch it. And he got his arm hit. And then KU jumped on. So it wasn't like he, you know, tried to pitch it back and it went, you know, like it just went off of nowhere. It was he had the ball out like he shouldn't have, but he actually got his arm hit and it got knocked in a way that, you know, if he was trying to lateral it, that was not the direction he was lateraling it in. But even then, like trying that hard in that situation to try to, you know, get it pushed through, when at that point you really just want to kind of, you know, avoid the loss and go into overtime. You're like, that was definitely a big issue. But Douglas Coleman is the name of the Red Raider who fumbled, you know,
there
just so
you
we
go.
Can throw that out there. But yeah, you know, it's funny because obviously I remember the game and I remember the play, but not the specific details of it. But you're right. Like that is kind of one of the, like when you're talking about craziness of the season, if you had to boil it down to a single play, I think that is probably like the one play. But if it was the, you know, games that you're talking about, like I don't think the Texas Tech probably even makes the top four of most people's you know, lists for whatever reason. Because I've talked with a few people already, and it's, you know, it's the BC game, understandably, the Texas game, understandably, that, you know, that game against Indiana State to open up the season. I think I have that right. I've been throwing all kinds of stuff around, but then the most memorable in terms of Coastal Carolina, that loss to Coastal Carolina, not necessarily, you know, the best or the favorite, but in terms of like the most memorable, Texas Tech is luckily, I think, lucky to come into five if you're talking about overall games. But if you're talking about individual plays, it's hard not to put that one as the top two or three.
And that was the game, you're right, you know, it comes right after the Texas game, and that was in that brief moment in the season, it was a two-game stretch where Carter Stanley looked amazing. He threw for over 400 yards against Tech with three touchdowns. I mean, it was one of those, you know, he played that game and the Texas game back-to-back, and he thought, oh, my God, Brent Dierman is a wizard. Like, holy cow, he did all of this in such a brief moment of time. But, yeah, the game ended so sloppily that it's like, okay, well, this is just kind of a, you know, just going to be another classic KU game. But, you know, to come away with that, and to me, more than anything, even more than what I mentioned earlier about how, like, these aren't the kind of breaks that KU gets, it was just peak Les Miles. Like, this was the full Les Miles experience in one game. Like, all this craziness happened, the game you should not have won, and I think back to when Miles was at LSU, I think when he used to run, like, fake field goals with the holder throwing the ball over his head, or I think the disaster they had against Tennessee back when Derek Dooley was coaching Tennessee, where they had too many men on the field, they should have won the game, LSU gets another chance and wins. Like, this is Les Miles. It's just chaotic football, and it was just a cool moment as someone who follows and covers and is a fan of KU, be like, wow, this is our team now. Like, we're the ones who are the beneficiaries of the Mad Hatter at his most mad.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think that kind of sums it up perfectly. That is Mad Hatter at KU and, like, really making its appearance there. And obviously, you can't count on that stuff all the time, but it is definitely kind of nails home that this is, you know, this is the kind of stuff that we can think about where, you know, there's going to be weird stuff happening with this team. And I think part of that is just because of what Brent Dierman brings, and it's going to be so kind of off the wall all over the place. But Les Miles, you know, just brings that factor of strange things happening I think that was a very, very good one up on the list. Like I said, I'm not sure that most people would put it up there, but it definitely deserves mentioning. And I've got Mike Plank, the editor-in-chief over at Rock Chalk Talk, with me now. Mike, what would be your favorite or most memorable moment for the Kansas football team this year?
Well, Andy, I think first of all, thanks for having me.
To answer your question,
I think the easy answer is Boston College. I had the unquestioned pleasure of heading east for that game, and a couple hundred Jayhawks that were there, we had a grand old time that night. So Carter Stanley shook off an early interception and had a great game, and that was just domination is what it was, and we haven't seen that from Kansas football in a long time. And I have no idea what some of your other people have said, but I think that's definitely my football highlight for the year.
Yeah, that's definitely been one of the favorites, and I had completely forgotten that you actually went out for that game and got to experience the crowd firsthand. I was one of the unlucky ones, along with most of, I think, Jayhawk Nation, because that game was on the ACC network, which is pretty much impossible to get unless you just happen to be one of those special people that are really lucky and are in the ACC footprint. And so it was definitely difficult, I think, to find that game. And it was even more difficult, to be able to just sit down and watch it. So it was interesting. It was a lot of fun. And I agree, you being there probably made the experience completely different than what other people had said. But there was multiple people that had picked that one.
Yeah, I bet. And if I may, a couple of, I think, probably good honorable mentions would be, obviously, the Texas Tech win was huge. The end of the game was kind of weird, but again, that was a game that Kansas, I think, deserved to win. They played well. They didn't turn the ball over. They just straight up, flat out beat Texas Tech. And then probably the most fun game of the year was actually the loss in Austin to Texas, another game that Kansas probably could have easily won. That was just a super fun, back and forth, up and down affair, and they end up dropping it by two late in the fourth quarter. But they definitely had some entertaining football games this year.
Yeah, and that's really what we were looking for as Kansas fans this year, was not necessarily, big wins or anything like that. It was to see improvement, which I thought we saw, especially when Brent Dierman took over. Yeah, there was the hiccups, the game against Oklahoma, and some of those other games where things seemed to kind of take a step back. But I think a lot of that was, kind of just talent disparities and really kind of getting beaten down as players decided to drop out and, they kind of saw everything kind of go against them at the end of the year. So, they fought hard. We had lots of positive moments, even in some of the losses like you're talking about. And yeah, those three moments there were definitely heavy favorites. They've all been mentioned by other people. And I imagine, when you're thinking about Kansas football, it's most likely going to be one of those three. Other ones that are a possibility, maybe negative, negative moments would potentially be obviously that loss to Coastal Carolina, the way that happened. Not necessarily a favorite moment, but that's probably going to, I guess if not for the immediate turnaround with the big win against Boston College, that could have been a season defining moment and the most memorable thing. But, kind of to add it to what your original point was, Boston College, that would be one of the most memorable, I think, because it changed the narrative of the season, from a very close win against Indiana State, to then a, ridiculous loss against Coastal Carolina. All of a sudden you get a gigantic win. You covered the spread in the other direction as Kansas, because Boston College was a 24, I think they were a 24-point favorite, and Kansas won by 24 points. You covered the spread in the other direction, and immediately the entire narrative of the season turns. It gets people excited, and I think it causes, that was what allowed Brent Dierman to take over as offensive coordinator later in the year and really gives Kansas any kind of positive momentum or positive feelings going into this next year, assuming we even get to have another season this season.
Right, right.
So, exactly.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
And I'm joined now by David Potter, the senior editor over at Rock Chalk Talk. David, question for you right now. What is your favorite or the most memorable moment for you from the football season this year?
So I kind of have two answers to this. My first gut reaction was going to be the Boston College game, just because, I mean, those first two games were so uninspiring, barely beating Indiana State, and then actually losing at home to Coastal Carolina, and just seeing the offense open up and seeing Carter Stanley really step up and the offense actually, you know, do much of anything was nice to see. But just to rout a team from a Power 5 school on the road was really gratifying, because it hadn't happened basically since the Mark Mangino days. But I think my favorite moment is actually the Texas Tech game. I mean, it took some screwy stuff happening for us to actually come away with the win. You know, mainly that recovered fumble on the blocked field goal attempt that set us up for another field goal that got us the victory. But I think the circumstances around that win really did a lot for making that my favorite moment of the season, because we were coming off the Texas game, which we had very nearly won, and just a few weeks before that, you know, we could have easily beaten West Virginia, though we ended up losing that one. So to then end up winning the Texas Tech game that week, it felt like we were a real football program, which just isn't a feeling KU fans have gotten to feel very often in recent years. So I think, yeah, as soon as that Texas Tech game ended, you know, I felt like, you know, we were, even if we weren't good yet, we were a real football team. And it's tough to get much better than that right now as a KU football fan.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, those two games back to back, because, I mean, that was, you know, right after Brent Dearman had taken over, if I'm remembering the timeline of all that correctly, you know, really the first two games that he had an opportunity to really show what he would be doing. And, you know, to have two offensive explosions like that, even if it, you know, like in the past, they've been able to either score or play good defense. And if they don't get both, but not do both. And so to see that happen, for them to have some issues early, be able to get the offense going, to have the defense come and, you know, even though they had problems, you know, down the stretch of that Texas Tech game, the fact that they were able to do enough to allow the rest of the comeback to happen. And then Kansas goes ahead and punches it on one of the craziest plays. You know, to be honest, actually, it's kind of funny because you're not the first person to actually pick Texas Tech, but you know, it was actually kind of perfect symmetry on the game, because the first pass that Carter Stanley threw was actually picked off by the same guy who ended up getting his arm hit and fumbling the lateral, which I don't think was actually intended to be a lateral, but you know, that who actually fumbled it to allow them the opportunity to go ahead and actually kick that field goal at the end. So, you know, that had, I think, all the ups and downs that you can get, but still have a win at the end you can get from a game like that. But like you said, kind of staggering both of those together, one right after the Texas game, I think really gave everybody a good feeling about the offense moving forward. Even though they weren't able to kind of maintain that throughout the rest of the season, they obviously had issues the rest of the way. It was still nice to kind of see that there are those signs of life, and at least they're moving in the right direction. Was there any specific play from that game other than the final one, though, that really kind of stood out to you?
I think throughout the second half, I don't remember it play for play now, but I feel like on back-to-back possessions, or maybe two out of three, we connected on long pass plays.
and picked up big yardage. I think both of them went for touchdowns. At least one was Parchman. It might have been Dalen Charlo on the other one. But just being able to consistently put together big plays like that is just not something, other than maybe from Puka Williams here and there the last couple of years, that's not something that we've seen out of that offense a whole lot. So I think just seeing us able to stretch the field and having a quarterback able to, I mean, even just complete a pass downfield to a receiver who'd gotten open, I'm setting the bar low, but those sorts of things are just such market improvement. They were exciting, and seeing us able to identify a weakness in the other team, because Texas Tech's secondary played really poorly for the most part in that game, and exploit that, those are all just really good signs and more evidence that, hey, you know, this team's coming together, and you know, they're not going to be world beaters, but yeah, I mean, it's not going to be the easy game that it usually is when the other team has to play Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, and it's actually, because like you were saying, you know, identifying that weakness, there actually were three long touchdown passes from Carter Stanley. All three of his touchdown passes were extremely long ones. You know, the first one was a 48-yard pass right before halftime. Then, you know, with about 4 minutes left in the third quarter, Stephon Robinson Jr. caught a 65-yard pass. And then Andrew Parchman caught a 70-yard pass. And so, like you said, like to complete the comeback, to come all the way back and tie that game up, you know, it was two long passes that came really, really close to each other. But, you know, also just the defense able to kind of step up. And even though Texas Tech went down and scored to take the lead again right after that, you know, they were able to do enough, you know, and then after Velton Gardner scored on that 32-yard run, like the big play was really, I think, what's exciting and what has been missing from this team for the longest time is that they didn't have a scheme that was set up to allow them to continually get big plays. Obviously, it's going to take execution now, and having no spring football is going to potentially cause problems with that. But, you know, it's going to take the execution of it. But at least now Kansas fans can feel that there is a system that will allow them to be able to compete in the Big 12. And I'm joined now by Steve Fetch, our basketball editor over at Rock Chalk Talk. Fetch, I have to ask you first, your favorite or most memorable moment from the football season this year?
Yeah, I think I'm actually probably going to go with the Boston College game. It's obviously either that or the Texas Tech game. You know, the Texas Tech game had that amazing finish with the, you know, the blocked field goal, and then they fumbled it, and then they kicked the field. Maybe it is the Texas Tech game, given how much I'm going to say, how much I'm talking about it. But I'm going to say Boston College. I mean, that was just a whoop on, you know, a beatdown of a, you know, not a great team, but a Power 5 team, and a Power 5 team that wasn't, you know, Rutgers. And on the road, you know, obviously snapped their road losing streak. So I think that one is probably the one that stood out to me. That was the one where that was kind of the first time last season where I thought that, you know, maybe there was something to this Les Miles hire, and maybe they had something cooking. So I'll say the BC win and a squeaker over the Texas Tech.
Yeah. I mean, those were two, I think, of the most popular ones, you know, which is completely understandable. Obviously the two big wins, you know, if you wanted to go a little bit I should say, I think part of what kind of bumps the Boston College win up there as well, it's just how uneasy everybody was after the start of the season, you know, barely winning against the FCS team and then losing against Coastal Carolina when everything just completely fell flat. You know, it was also a really big opportunity to kind of see what Brent Bierman brings, you know, to Kansas, because it was obvious that he had his fingerprints all over that game plan. He had his fingerprints all over, you know, the sets that they were running, kind of the way that would work. And while he whether he was actually helping during the actual game, because he wasn't really supposed to, if he was, or not, you know, it was clear that those concepts were his, and it really kind of set up him taking over as offensive coordinator halfway through the season.
There were plenty of talk, I guess, would be the right way to say it, on Twitter, where you could pretty much determine which game plans were led by Brent Bierman and which ones weren't, and, you know, when he had his fingerprints all over the offense and when he didn't. And you're right, that BC win was the first game where it really looked like, you know, his concepts and his philosophies and stuff were coming out, and I mean, it really unlocked Carter Stanley. You know, he sure had a good game in that game, and you know, I think propelled him to a really nice finish to the season and a really nice finish to his career. And hopefully they're able to, you know, find that magic again next year with whoever the starting quarterback is. But I think, you know, whoever, or I guess I should say, as long as Dearman is going to be the offensive coordinator, I think that this is, you know, going to be something that, that we see more and more of for sure.
And I'm joined now by Andrew Doty of the High Motor Podcast. Andrew, you were on with us early this year before football even started, kind of talking about what was going on and what we were expecting to see this year. So first question for you, obviously, is related to football. What is the most memorable or your favorite moment from the football season we just had?
You know, I was thinking back to that. I was trying to remember the last time I was on. Yeah, and I think it was right before the season started or like right after the season started. And I spent a good deal amount of time talking about how I actually didn't mind David Beatty. I think you kind of agree with me that I think he wasn't the worst guy for the job. And then when you posted it, a handful of people came at me and thought that that was a horrific take. So I'm glad to be. I think it was that, right? I think it was right before the football season started.
And what you were trying to say there was that when he was hired, it was not the worst hire, but we both agreed time that extending him was the problem. And I think that's a fairly recognized position. It was an absolute travesty for them to extend him when they did.
Yeah, but now apparently, as we learned today from Jesse Newell, that he was now doing Uber last year, which I'm still struggling to wrap my head around how David Beatty would actually need money to be an Uber driver. So a year ago, we were talking about David Beatty, and I was praising him for the first couple of years at KU and slowly rebuilding that program. Now we're talking about David Beatty, the Uber driver. So things have transformed just a little bit for David Beatty.
Well, he's got to have something to do with his time, right?
Well, I'm wondering if it is, and I haven't talked to Jesse about this yet. I'm wondering if it's something where, like, he had to show that he was trying to get employment during all this. So, like, he just had to go drive for Uber a few. There's no way. And I get that he didn't get his buyout, but he still made millions of dollars as a head coach. He was making quite a bit of money before that at A&M and elsewhere. There's no way that David Beatty needs, like, $100 a week, right? There's no way that that is possible. Right. That's where I'm struggling. In terms of a memory, I don't have one from the David Beatty era, even though I think that looking back, I think in 10 or 15 years looking back, I think a lot of KU fans will look back and hopefully say he was not that bad. Yes, it ended not great and he was a horrible in-game coach, but anything like that. My best memory is because I was a freshman at Kansas in 2007, and before that, I'm not from there. I'm from Minnesota, so I didn't grow up like a KU fan. And even though I had a blast in 07 as a freshman with football, I didn't fully appreciate what was going on. Like, I had fun going to the Nebraska game. I remember watching the A&M game on TV when I was in St. Louis. And, like, it was fun to do that. I wasn't in Miami for the Orange Bowl, but, you know, it was fun to be a part of that. But because I wasn't a KU fan and suffering for that long, I didn't fully appreciate that. So I think my biggest memory is going back to last year, which when you first asked me to come on the show, I assumed it would be something during the Orange Bowl season. But I was sitting here. It was that Friday night game against Boston College. And when Boston College came out quickly and scored, I was literally looking up, like, what is Les Miles' buyout? This is pathetic. Somehow KU got worse. And then literally it went from 0 to 60, and I didn't move the whole game. I didn't even sit on the couch. I was sitting on our kitchen island watching the game, and I didn't move the whole game because I was like almost in shock of what was happening, because for the first time since early 2009, or we could even say late 2008, it felt good to be like a KU fan. Yeah, like the Texas win was fun a few years back. Yeah, beating Central Michigan on the road for the first road win in a decade was cool in 2018, but at no point during those games, and when they beat TCU 4 or 5 years back, when they beat West Virginia, those KU teams were so ugly to watch that it didn't even feel like you were watching football. It didn't feel like anything to actually be proud of. But last year during that Boston College game, for the first time in, 9, 10 years, we were actually watching like a football game with Kansas. It wasn't some other team going there on a Friday night and whooping up on Boston College. This was a Kansas team that had done nothing. They had, what, 18, I think, total wins from 2010 to 2018, five total Big 12 wins over that time. They hadn't won a Power 5 road game since 2008. And it was almost like I was watching my son or like somebody play football that I knew. I didn't cry. Like, I didn't get that far, but I was honestly emotional watching that game and looking back over the 13 years that I've been a KU fan. Oddly, a win at Boston College is the best memory that I have. Am I overreacting to that? I get that it was a huge win, but can you think of something else over the last 12 years that you've been more proud of as a KU football fan?
To be honest, like, I mean, no, because the rest of it, you know, like, obviously the win against Texas when Beatty was here, you know, that was a great win, but it was a fluke win.
It was an ugly fluke win. They went to Chestnut Hill and just beat the piss out of a decent Boston College team.
Yeah. And then the win against Texas Tech, because that was the other one that a lot of people were talking about in terms of wins, as kind of their favorite moment from this last season. And you know, that one again was a fluky win. Like, you had, like, they were driving and they had a very good chance to win that game, but the way they won the game was as fluky as it gets, you know, on a blocked field goal that then turned into a fumble so that you can then go kick the field goal to win it. Like, that's as fluky as it gets, I think. And so, you know, from this last season, yes, that was probably the biggest moment to be proud of, was to see how good a Brent Dierman type of offensive system could potentially work, even though he wasn't in charge of it at the time. You could tell the stuff that was working was definitely stuff that Brent Dierman was supposed to be bringing to the offense. And so,
and even talking with some of my, it shows you what it's been for the last 12 years. Even after that game, like, a lot of my friends aren't KU fans. Like, they're not KU fans at all. They don't follow KU football. And after that game, I was so excited about it. And they kept saying, like, why? You went on the road and beat a 5-win Boston College team. Well, why is because of what I just said. You had 18 wins for the last 9 years. It shows you how low this program was to go on. What did Boston College finish? Like 5-7, I think, last year. So it shows you how low they were. And just to go on the road, and even if they would have, like, lost that game 42-40, something like that, kind of like that Texas type of game from last year. The biggest thing for me is, yeah, I cared about the win, but we were just watching football again. It had felt like so long since we had just actually sat down and watched a good, clean football game.
Yeah. So Boston College was actually 6-7. They ended up going to a bowl game,
right?
As 6-6. But you're right. I mean, yeah, they were, but you also have to remember, they were actually, people thought they were going to be a good team prior to that game. And everybody thought, I mean, they were 24-point favorites coming into the game. Kansas beat them by 24 points. And so, like, that, I think, was the most shocking part about it, was Boston College was supposed to be a good team, and Kansas went in and pants them, and it wasn't even close. And, you know, by the end of the game, Boston College was going for it on fourth down from their own 25, I believe it was, at some point, because they just wanted to get something going, and Kansas wouldn't let them do any of it. And so, you know, it was just fantastic to finally be on the other end of a kind of beatdown like that, and to get some sort of hope that, even though, you know, nobody really expected Kansas to do that going in, and even going, you know, afterwards, like, the talk from everybody that I know that really pays attention to Kansas wasn't that, oh my gosh, this is a great team, you know, that, you know, they did all this. It's like, now we have hope that the season could be something. It's not going to be a winning season.
It didn't even matter that they weren't a great team, or they weren't going to be a great team. They could have lost all the other games after that or gotten smashed. Again, going back to, it was just like, we were enjoying Kansas football for once, like,
exactly.
60 minutes of it. Not just, yeah, like what we said, beating Texas was fun. That game, like, it wasn't fun. Or when they beat TCU ugly a few years before that, it wasn't fun. This game was just, not to keep repeating myself, but it was just a fun football game to watch for once in the last 12 years.
And that's it for the group of guys that have all come on to kind of share their favorite moments. There were a few other moments that I just wanted to mention just because, you know, they were memorable. Obviously, you know, there was some unhappy ones in Kansas getting slaughtered by TCU after finding out that Khalil Herbert was leaving the team literally hours before the game was supposed to start, you know, and then bouncing back the next week and leading Oklahoma shortly at the beginning of the game, really looking like that one was going to be a game before the wheels fell off right before halftime. And then Kansas was just never able to recover there. You know, and, you know, obviously they had the ones that everyone talks about, Boston College, Texas Tech, Texas, those were some obvious highlights, even though that game against Texas was a loss. But another one that kind of late in the season that was a really good highlight for them, again, even though it was in a loss, was a game against Iowa State. You know, that was the third week in a row they were playing the number 22 ranked team in the nation. You know, they lost to Kansas State pretty big. They lost to Oklahoma State pretty big. And then they played Iowa State, and they were able to go ahead and actually stay in that one and keep that one close late, and were able to pull it out. But those were all games that I wanted to go ahead and mention. But, you know, that will do it for this episode of the Rock Chalk Podcast. That is, you know, every single moment that really kind of jumped out to our panel of guys that have all come on to talk about football. The next episode will be about college basketball. That episode will be dropping on Wednesday. So definitely make sure that you come back for that. But if you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. You can subscribe to us there. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk. If you subscribe, you'll get every episode as soon as it comes out, including the ones that are both coming out this week, the rest of the week. If you can give us a rating and a review, 5 stars, nice comments, that'd be great as well. If not, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. You know, we really do bring the podcast to you guys for your entertainment, to get you all the information that you could possibly need surrounding the program. We also do want, you know, if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, anyone you want to try to interview, anything like that, if you have any suggestions for us for the summer, when there's going to be not very much sports stuff going on, but definitely we still want to be bringing you guys content, you can contact me on Twitter at RockChalkPod, by email at RockChalkPodcast@gmail.com. But that'll do it for tonight's episode. And we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.